LA Talk.
Listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, Jim and Jamal Potts back on the air again. We've had some little technical difficulties. Just to let you know, we have switched. We're no longer on Zoom. We're on another situation, and there was a couple of adjustments that had to be made. So hopefully everybody is patient and is hung in there with us. Jamal, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right today. Not bad.
Good, good. What we're going to be doing today, we're going to have the Honorable Steve Cooley on, who's going to be coming into the show in a few minutes, and former L.A. County District Attorney, and we're going to be talking about some issues with the new L.A. County District Attorney and getting some feedback from Steve on that. So he'll be joining us in a second. In the meantime, what we want to talk about today, besides that, I want to mention about National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. Now, this has been a big issue. I've talked about it on the show. As a matter of fact, in Houston, just a few days ago, 9 people escaped from a confined home where they were slaves, and they went to a local restaurant, and the local restaurant called the police. By the time the police got there, the people that were enslaving them actually got away with 15 other people that they had in the house as well. So this, coincidentally, is in fact National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. So we want to keep in mind that these things are going on. And as what I ask people to do is keep your eye out for this kind of stuff. I mean, it is a serious situation. So at any rate, now I see Steve has joined us now. Steve, how you doing?
Doing great, Jim. How you doing?
All right. Can you hear me okay?
Perfect. Now, yeah.
Great, great, great. Well, I've already said that you're going to be on the show. We got Jamal on, so everything looks like it's moving forward right now. By the way, anybody that wants to call in, there is now a new call-in number, and that is the number 323-203-0815, just to let you know that. And it's right there posted. In the meantime, let's get busy with some of these emails that we got. Jim and Steve, I understand you have a new book out as well. Before I move on to that, is that correct?
That's correct. It's the second book in a series of 3. This one is called "Blue Lives in Jeopardy: When the Badge Becomes the Target." It's nonfiction, just like the last one, except this one here has a theme of officers being executed, or when the bad guy gets a drop on them, executed with a bad guy gets a drop on them and assassinated when they have no chance whatsoever. They're all Los Angeles County law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty. Quite dramatic. And once again, we have a lessons learned component put in there by Greg Meyer, who is a renowned use of force police tactics expert. So we're very proud of this book, and you can get it on Amazon and all the rest of the usual places.
Very good. And Steve, you know, when I was on duty with the LA County Sheriff's Department, I lost a buddy of mine up in the Palmdale area, Palmdale Lancaster area, that was executed by a guy he had arrested and then got out. And then he said he was going to kill the officer if he ever got out. And he gets out and he puts in a phony domestic violence call. And that same deputy responded to that house. And as he got out of the vehicle, the guy shot him with a high powered rifle. Put the deputy on the front of the car for target practice, and then dragged him a mile or two. And obviously, you know, he passed away, left a wife and a small baby. So these things do happen. I mean, it's out there. There's no doubt about it. And I know there's been a lot of issues regarding defunding the police, and the police are taking these bad hits right now. I just think it's ridiculous to a certain extent with this. I really honestly do. So I think your book would be a welcome sight out there for those people who are behind law enforcement, and good luck with the book, Steve.
Yeah, they can check out the website, BlueLivesInJeopardyBook.com.
Very good. Very good. Let's get into these emails. Jim, last week you mentioned about Biden's plans regarding guns. I would like to express that parents and adults should be held accountable criminally as well as civilly for their not securing their guns from their children. Whether the kids use them accidentally, intentionally for suicides, the adults should be held accountable. What is your opinion? That's from Susan from Boston, Massachusetts. Well, Susan, I have to tell you, I don't disagree with you at all. I did a little research, and to be honest with you, here's some statistics. The stats are that between the ages of 5 to 18, between 1999 and 2017, we don't have some of the updated ones yet, 38,942 kids were either killed or hurt with guns that they were able to secure from their parents or from adults. And that represented 1.2% of all of the shootings during that particular time. Homicides among 5 to 18-year-olds in 2020, there was unintentional shootings by kids. There were 220 with 92 deaths. That, to me, is just totally unacceptable. Steve, let me ask you a question. When you were L.A. County District Attorney, did you ever see any of these killings by kids as well, other than gang-related, we'll say?
I don't recall seeing any that resulted in a death. There may have been some prosecutions of individuals where the child got access to the gun when it should have been locked up and put away. And I'm sure those were prosecuted routinely. Now, interestingly, that's usually going to be a parent who's a law-abiding citizen, but they will be prosecuted because the message has to go out: secure your weapons away from your children.
That, I mean, that to me is a common sense thing. I mean, Jamal, who's my son, he grew up in a house. I mean, I had guns, but those guns were all secured. I mean, he's got kids, and he has a weapon that's a legally purchased weapon that he has also, that in fact is a, and Jamal, don't you keep your weapon secured?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's the only way to go. And I think parents should be held accountable for it, quite frankly. You know, on this show, I have talked before about these active shooters with these children. And, you know, it is amazing to me how many parents do give their kids guns. Now, Steve, it also depends where some of these kids live. I had one kid who was in Arkansas. He got his first gun at 6 years old, you know, because we're in Arkansas. They did what? You know, they go out, they go hunting and things of that nature. Well, this same kid turned around and took that gun when he was older, 5 years older, and went and killed 26 kids at his school. You know, and they couldn't convict him or try him as an adult. They tried him as a minor, and they turned around and sent him to a juvenile detention facility till he was 21. And at 21, he got released. I mean, you know, and I fault the parents for that once again. So we just have to see what's going to be done here. So we'll just see. I got a text message, and I do get these messages from people throughout. They're talking about there should be a requirement regarding gun safety with parents, et cetera. Well, hopefully they're, you know, the message will be out there. So we'll see. Let's get on to the next email. Jim, I heard your previous show that discussing L.A. County D.A. Gasson and some of the radical changes he intends to make. Good for you. Now his own prosecutors are suing him over his reduction in sentences for potential life sentences for three strikes. They have passed felony and life without parole sentences, you know, in murder cases. I hope his recall gets signatures to kick him out. You know, his practices did not make it in San Francisco, and they won't make it here. And this is signed by Cliff. Well, this is going to segue. That's why I chose one of these emails here, because it's going to kind of segue into why Steve is here today. So, you know, from that perspective, Steve, we'll go ahead and, you know, I'll ask you to, you know, invite you at least to talk about this business with the prosecutions. Now, Steve, I did a little research on this after the person sent this in. So some of his actual prosecutors have filed a lawsuit through the union because he's been telling them that they can't apparently, you know, well, you heard what I just said, the three strikes, the sentencings and things of that nature. Do you have any comments about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The union representing about 800 skilled professional deputy district attorneys is suing George Gascon, seeking a writ of mandate, asking a judge very simply for the judge to say, George Gascon, obey the law. You cannot violate the law. The deputy DAs and just about anyone in law enforcement and judges are saying, this guy, George Gascon, does not know what he is doing. He is trying to be a state legislature or a person who makes laws, he can't do that. His oath is to follow the law. He is going to get recalled. It takes about 90 days for a person to be in office before a recall can be initiated. I guarantee you, this guy's going to get recalled. He is a disaster for the criminal justice system.
Well, you know, Steve, one of the things I read, because I did a little research on it as well, one of the things that I read is whether or not there's going to be an argument that the prosecutors don't have standing because they're not being harmed personally.
Well, they are being harmed personally because George Gascon, through his directives, is asking them to do something that's unethical and illegal. That means their bar card is on the line if they do what he tells them to do. So they have standing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And when it comes to a written mandate, it's a lot broader concept in terms of standing. You could be a taxpayer and sue and say, hey, Mr. District Attorney, how about obey the law here? Follow the law. Mm-hmm. So that's not going to be an issue.
Jamal, what do you think about the concept that these guys are suing? They're suing their boss for all practical purposes. That's what they're doing. What do you think?
Hey, I've never heard of something like that. You know what I mean? So that one's kind of new to me. And, you know, but everybody should have to follow the law, no matter who it is. You know what I mean?
And, well, they're being forced not to follow the law. That's the thing by his policies.
Right. So as Mr. Cooley just said, you know, if it's going to cost them their bar and everything that they worked hard for, then they can't do it. And they have every right to sue them for that.
Yeah, I mean, and I also look at the victims. I mean, I talked to Steve on the show last week, I think it was. We also talked about the victims. I mean, there's one where, you know, they're not going to prosecute this guy. It was a gang-related situation. He's not going to do the enhancements, you know, and the family's very upset about that. Steve, let me ask you a question, though, about enhancements. Are enhancements, when it's a gang-related killing, how much time does that really add to the murder sentence, we'll say? I mean, if he gets 20 years or whatever, does the enhancement increase? I don't do criminal law, obviously, but I don't see that end of it. Even when I was a police officer, I do employment law now. So yeah. What do you think?
Every single enhancement can add either a fixed term or a range of terms. The enhancements apply to prior criminal history, which is a big dispute, a great bodily injury, doing a crime at the behest of a gang or the direction of a gang, use of a gun, consecutive sentences. There are a number of enhancements established in the determinate sentence law by the legislature and by the people by way of initiative over the years. This is just a way for certain conduct and certain prior criminal behavior is accounted for in determining an appropriate and fair sentence. I'll give you an example. Someone goes out with a gun and commits 10 armed robberies. According to Gascon's theory, that's the same as someone going out without a gun and committing a strong arm robbery. That'll be the same sentence under his rules because he says no enhancements at all whatsoever. And that's why the victims groups are uniting against him and saying, let's recall George Gascon, because he is taking away the sort of sentences that these perpetrators deserve.
I just got an email from a listener that said Gascon is also giving back after previously convicted long prison sentences to resentence them to under 20 years. Now, that to me is totally insane. How do you go back?
Actually, he did say that. He said he wants to go back and review about 20,000 previous sentences that have been imposed by the court where the person has gone off to state prison, where it exceeds 15 years or any of his policies, and he says he's going to try and recall them and resentence them. That just shows you once again, he does not know the law. The judges determine who gets recalled, under what circumstances. He can make all the motions he wants. He can make 20,000 motions to recall 20,000 cases. You better expect to see 20,000 denials of his motions.
I got a question for you. When we talk about enhancements, when I hear enhancements, that means these particular persons get more time than the average person would for committing the same crime. Is that correct?
Yes, they get more time for that particular provable conduct or prior criminal history than they would have gotten as opposed to someone else who committed the same crime does not have the prior criminal history and did not commit the enhancements, such as using a gun, great bodily injury, things of that nature. So now, stay away.
I know that people, you know, you let's say you have two drug dealers. One sells rock cocaine and the other one sells powder form cocaine, the same amount. The persons or the people that sell the rock cocaine, they actually got a lot more time in harder sentences than the person selling the powder cocaine.
You're totally correct. That was the law, and it was a very disparate sentencing scheme that our federal authorities put in place. Trump has wiped that out with his various reforms. But no, you're right. That was an unfair, illogical sentencing scheme where people were treated differently when they shouldn't be.
Right. And that's considered like one of the enhancements that'll be removed. Is that right?
Well, that was actually a federal law that really increased the sentence for rock cocaine as opposed to powder cocaine. But you're right. There were some serious inequities there, and people selling rock cocaine, dealing in rock cocaine, received much harsher penalties than those dealing in powder. It just didn't make sense, other than it was a congressional reaction to the rock cocaine problem at the time.
In the 80s?
Yeah, in the 80s, yes, about right. Late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
Well, you know, and that's why here's the other problem. When people start complaining about the judicial system, they start talking about the fact that there's so many things that are, you know, inequitable. This is not fair. That's not fair. I mean, it's not a perfect system, and we all know that. But these individuals, you know, feel that some of it's race motivated. I mean, Steve, when you were in the office, these allegations, as an example, that, you know, blacks were treated one way versus whites were being treated the other way. I mean, I know that that's not the case, but it'd be nice for the listeners to hear from your perspective. Do you think that it was one-sided? I mean, what's your opinion?
No, actually, because of the way the law is structured and because of the checks and balances in the system, it's almost impossible for people who were similar in terms of their criminal history and similar in terms of the crimes they commit being treated disparately, because the law mandates that the DA file something only according to the facts that he can prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And then the judge gets to double check that first at a preliminary hearing and then at the trial phase. So the determinant sentence law is very sophisticated and governed by strict rules. They're called sentencing rules for Superior Court judges. By the time you go through that process, race is really out of the picture. It's the conduct and it's the prior criminal history.
But the prior criminal history, as I understand it, is not really brought up until the sentencing phase, correct?
Well, it's alleged, and then it has to be proven or admitted to before the trial or proven at the trial or as part of the plea. The person just admits to it.
Well, the plea is a plea. So if somebody you know pleads out, you know, wants to get a plea bargain situation, then it's different anyway, because it's all on the table.
You might plea bargain for to have a prior conviction stricken, so he doesn't do that extra time. That's part of the plea bargain, and that's covered by a whole set of rules too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, when we say that it's not racially biased, you know, three strike law, who was, and I give credit to who credit was due, and which was the Clintons and Biden, who implemented that three strike law. And that three strike law affected the minority community a lot more than other communities. So if it's getting more extreme to one side than the other.
Well, the three strikes law in California was a California law also, and it was reformed in 2007. In fact, my office wrote the language for the initiative that reformed the original three strikes law, which was passed in 1994. The reform was that if the new offense were to be a nonviolent or a non-serious crime, that then the person would not get 25 to life. Okay. They would be sentenced under the second strike sentencing scheme. Now, on the other hand, if they did have prior serious or violent felonies and committed a new serious and violent felony, well, then they would be exposed to 25 to life. So the 25 to life law initially was very harsh and could have been disparate based upon people with prior criminal histories. But it was reformed, and it's still a valuable tool to get the really dangerous individuals off the streets and into prison.
I remember what made the news was this individual, this guy that stole a piece of pizza. You know, maybe the people were eating the pizza, and he came up and took a piece of pizza. And then as a result of him stealing that pizza, there was a three strike. That was his third strike. So there was a lot of uproar because it was a third strike. Do you remember that situation?
I remember that case, and that happened before I was DA.
Okay.
The facts of the matter were it ended up being a taking by force or fear. And it wasn't a theft of a pizza. It was a forcible taking robbery of a piece of pizza. As you know, anything of value can be the subject of theft or robbery.
Right, that's right.
Or it's the force used or the fear inflicted on the victim in order to take property away from them. So it was a little more aggravated than just taking a piece of pizza away.
Right.
It was a boy, young man, who was the victim. And the individual who robbed him forcibly took the pizza. And he was a three striker.
Well, and for people that don't know the definition of robbery, it is, you're right, it's through the force of fear. So that's one of the factors that people don't realize. So it was more, it could have been a piece of candy. It wouldn't have mattered if you used force of fear for it.
Right.
You know,
well, just let me ask you this question. To help minimize some of these things, like, you know, people getting the third strikes and second strike. I noticed some people, unfortunately, that no matter what they do, they're always going to turn to the criminal world, unfortunately. But do you think prison reform could help minimize some of this?
Well, under state law, the penal system is designed not just to punish, but to also reform and correct. It's called the Department of Corrections for a reason. They're supposed to provide programs that help individuals get away from the life of crime. And many individuals take advantage of it, and they get out of prison, and they never reoffend. However, many do get out of prison, and they're just criminally oriented, and they do reoffend. And then when they get caught and get convicted, their prior criminal history will work against them.
Right, because a lot of times what I see, people come home from prison, and they can't get a job. And so, therefore, if they can't get a job, what can they do to avoid going back to crime? Do you mean just to support themselves?
Well, I would like to see the numbers on those who don't get a job. We just came out of, before the pandemic, mm-hmm. we came out of a period of the highest employment rate in 60 years in our country. That means everyone who wanted a job could pretty much get one if they had the skill set. That's the most important thing. Are you able to do the job
right.
that you're seeking? Do you have that training from wherever, or that education that you're going to do? And that right. they can get in prison. They do have that kind of training in prison.
Okay.
And, you know, Jamal, you know, with the clients that we deal with on a weekly basis, some of them do background checks. We get calls from clients where they do hire people with criminal records. I mean, not all of them, quite frankly, depends upon the seriousness of the crime as well. I mean, so let's face it. If somebody murdered somebody, nobody's going to be, you know, encouraged, so to speak, to hire somebody that got out of jail for murder or manslaughter, because if they hire that person, then it opens up on the civil litigation side, because if something happens at work with that person, you know that the plaintiff's attorney is going to come after that employer. Why did you hire that guy knowing that he had a past record like that? Well, so really, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, and also, you're not going to hire the convicted embezzler to be your chief financial officer of your company. That would be just negligent. And you're going to look at what they're convicted of and see if it's inconsistent with the job that they're seeking and that you're offering.
Right.
Jamal, nobody's not saying, I don't think, that it's not a tough road to hoe, okay, oh, so right, to speak. Right. Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, Jamal, I also think that there's a difference between a guy that went up one time for one event or whatever the case may be. But let's be clear about the law for employment. They can only go back 7 years, Jamal, just to refresh your memory on that. So on an employment application, if that conviction was more than 7 years in California, they don't even have to put it down. So when they say that people don't get hired, okay, if it's older than 7 years, they don't have to put it down, and the employer can't use that information anyway.
Right. I do agree with Mr. Cooley said, you know, you can't get out of prison expecting to get a high executive job, you know, after you done did some. And there has to be a compromise on both ends. You might have to do something that don't like to till you're taking your credibility again. And so, yeah, there has to be a balance. I'm all about balance.
We got another email from a listener. Let me just read that to you real quick. It says, career crooks are career crooks. In areas where a lot, if career crooks are one of the ethnic group, it may appear disparate, but career crooks are of all groups, and it is a matter of who gets arrested, when, and where. I mean, is that a fair statement, Steve? I mean, I think that's a fair statement. There are career crooks out there.
I think it's a fair statement because, remember, in order to be convicted of a crime, the proof has to be beyond a reasonable doubt. And if you want to test the allegations against you, you get a jury trial. And the judges are in a position to protect you also. So I think it's a system that is relatively accurate. Occasionally, it is inaccurate. There's an honest system as prosecutors or judges to make sure that it ends up being an even-handed application of the law, a fair application of the law, and very importantly, an accurate application of the law.
You know what, sometimes it was, I'm sorry, Jamal, were you going to say something?
No, I was just listening.
You know, Steve, what has disturbed me over the last, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 months with everything going on with this business about, these police officers. I mean, I don't think any of us will argue that George Floyd's death was ridiculous in terms of how it happened. There's no way that should have happened. But it puts a blemish on all law enforcement. This whole year, you know, and on the air, we've been talking about the fact that, you know, police officers need to be more respected. But there's people out there that no matter what, they just don't feel that the police officers, they just feel that they're all racist. And I think that, I don't believe that I'm working on this with the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. I just see anybody being treated any differently, in my experience. And this business about defund the police, let me ask you, Steve, what do you think about this madness about defunding the police?
Well, they can defund the police all they want, and they'll see an increase in crime and victimization and violent crime and murders. And that's already been proven. Most of the major cities throughout the United States, there's some movement to defund the police. They're all experiencing dramatic increases in murders and other violent crimes. So I think that's when you reduce the deterrence that a police presence, a police response provides, you're going to have people committing more crimes. It is that simple. Now, speaking of those people doing the yelling against the police, there were so many scenes that I saw of African-American police officers standing and trying to prevent a crowd from doing something criminal and vandalizing. Some Caucasian male or female is screaming at them that they're a racist. This is kind of crazy. We just have radicals out there in the streets. They really have no values whatsoever. They have no respect for law and order, and they're going to yell and scream at everybody and anybody. And I'm sure everyone that's listening to your show has seen that element out there. They are just for overthrowing the government.
You know what, Steve? I did some stats, okay, on one of the shows over the last few months. People have to realize about the media. The media is going to blow up the negative part of everything. And basically, they bring it up when a white police officer shoots a black citizen. Where is the ever innocent? You never hear about that. You never hear about a black officer shooting a white citizen. It's always because that's not news for them. They want to exploit. And the numbers of African-Americans that get shot in the course of a year, those percentages, I've talked about that on the show. Those are actually lower. And people don't understand that, but the media will blow up the one incident. And again, except for George Floyd, that was just ridiculous. I think everybody admits that, even police officers that said that was ridiculous. You know, but you're right. People will use those things to do the things that they do with the violence and the yelling and the screaming and things of that nature. It is just ridiculous, you know, without a doubt. Now, what I understand about, you know, the current district attorney is that he was in San Francisco before. And in San Francisco, my understanding, Steve, is that the amount of crime just skyrocketed under this guy. Is that your understanding?
Well, property crime in San Francisco is probably the highest in the country by far. And probably his policies contributed to that. But essentially, what he lacks is leadership. you're not going to be able to have an organization perform well if they don't respect you as a leader. He was disrespected in San Francisco by the police. The San Francisco Police Department officers, when he declared he's going to run for District Attorney of Los Angeles, sent us a note, a public note for saying, we hope and we pray that George Gascon does not do to Los Angeles what he did to San Francisco. The mayor of San Francisco endorsed Jackie Lacey, said Gascon's a bad guy. The city attorney of San Francisco endorsed Jackie Lacey, said Gascon's a bad guy. And now we in L.A. are finding out very clearly that Gascon is just a horrible district attorney. He is going to, because of his policies. He just does not know what he is doing.
Let me ask you a question. Why do you think, and I know you endorsed Jackie Lacey when she was running, as I recall, as well.
Yes.
Why do you think he defeated Jackie Lacey? I didn't think she was doing a bad job. Why do you think that Jackie Lacey was defeated by this guy?
George Soros, whom we all know, has purchased district attorney's offices throughout the country, Philadelphia, Chicago, many other places, dumped $2.5 million of his own money into an independent expenditure, saying bad things about Jackie Lacey and good things about George Gascon. Another couple of people from Silicon Valley who are enamored of Gascon's radicalism, they dumped another couple of million. I saw the numbers. Jackie Lacey got outspent by $4.5 million. You combine that kind of money, television ads that makes you mad, and Gascon look voting public, that's how you end up with someone like George Gascon as your district attorney. And then you end up with only having one solution, call George Gascon. And your listeners and viewers ought to just check out the Facebook page, Recall George Gascon. It started out with 90 people the first day after he got sworn in. It's well over 35,000 people now. This is a real serious movement.
People, right.
They made a mistake. They want to fix it.
Well, I think one of the things that led to him possibly winning, I know he wanted to propose new ideas like a use of force review board. And then also he wanted reviewing law enforcement fatality incidents going back to 2012. Did you guys hear about that? And what?
Oh yeah, no. He said I want to review all officer involved shootings, going back to 2012, and that's a quite a bit of work to take on, especially if you don't know what you're doing, and he doesn't know what he's doing. But he did say that, and I think that may have appealed to some people. But remember, some awfully good prosecutors, very carefully reviewed those officer-involved shootings. And then it's reviewed and reviewed and reviewed at about three different levels inside the DA's office, and it's critiqued. And then a decision is made according to the law, according to the standards set by the Supreme Court. I think Gascon's going to ignore the Supreme Court's standards in the area of officer-involved shootings, and I think he's going to cater to certain elements that really think the cops are terrible, terrible, bad, and should be prosecuted. And I think you're going to see a lot of very unfortunate prosecutions of police officers brought when they really shouldn't have been to the law.
Recall, Steve, who takes his place?
Well, the way it works is, first of all, very few recall efforts succeed. But those that do, here's the way it works. If you get enough signatures to recall someone within a certain time frame, then the registrar recorder can certify there will be a recall election. That must be held within 45 days of that certification. What happens is there's only two things on the ballot. Should we recall George Gascon, yes or no? If the yeses win, then you go over to another list of anyone who has applied for that position. Remember when Gray Davis was recalled, there were 152 people who ran for governor to be the governor if Gray Davis were to be recalled. He was recalled. Arnold Schwarzenegger won, as you recall, because he got the majority of votes beyond a plurality. But that's the way it works. You go to a list and you pick out someone who's on that list that you favor. And I think you'll see a lot of very, very worthy candidates who put their name on that list.
Is his name allowed to be on the list still?
No. his name is only there for the yes or the no. Do you right. Vote for, do you, should George Gascon be recalled? Yes or no? If the yes is win, then you
he's
go
gone.
To the list. Yeah, he's gone. And then you go to the list, and whoever gets the most votes off of that list becomes the next district attorney.
Hmm. So technically, Jackie could turn around and put her name back on the on that list because she could run. She could run again.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. She you know, she was also up against Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter, from what I understand, did not like Jackie Lacey.
They did not like Jackie Lacey. They ordered her went. There was a disruption. I understand that she was knocked down, knocked around, pushed around, and of course they would go to her house in the middle right. of the night. Beating the drums, disrupting their sleep. This is the new tactic, and it's happening really across the country. It happened to Pelosi and McConnell last night over the funding of, you know, the in terms of the pandemic funding and help to the people that need it. They got their houses vandalized. The mayor in Oakland, name is Jeff, her house was terribly vandalized. Chief of police in Seattle before she resigned, her home was vandalized. The mayor in Portland. This is a new tactic. Go to their house, intimidate that public official in a very direct way. And I don't think there's ever been anyone in government more harassed and tormented and tortured than Jackie Lacey was when she was district attorney. It was terrible. Terrible.
You know, I'm trying to remember. When she ran, I don't remember what was the percentage by which she won. Was she overwhelmingly supported?
Let's say it was solid. The guy that she ran against was Alan Jackson. It was a very, right. very accomplished, skilled trial lawyer. But Jackie won by about, I'd say, 8 to 10 points, which is pretty pretty good. When I beat Gil Garcetti, I beat him by 28 points. That's well beyond a landslide.
Right, right.
It was a solid victory for her. It wasn't particularly close. But
yeah, I know Alan Jackson. He's doing very well as a criminal defense
attorney. He's a good lawyer, and I wish him well. And Jackie Lacey was so well liked that no one challenged her for her second term.
That's right.
No one took her on. But then this time, Gascon's there with all of Soros's money. The rest of these Silicon wives of billionaires money, and Gascon captured another district attorney's office. He already had Chicago. He had Philadelphia. He's got one of the boroughs in New York. He's got a Commonwealth in Virginia. He's picking them up right and left. He's lost a few. He had four challenges in California in the last cycle. He lost all four. But he's going to spend that money, and he's going to capture DA's offices. And the big elephant, the big prize, Los Angeles County, because it's so large and so important that now having his guy in there, Gascon, Soros having Gascon in there, this is going to be a very serious challenge to law, to criminal justice and public safety. The largest county in the United States of America.
You know, we have enough issues in L.A. County without needing this kind of stuff. I mean, the reality is, you know, you talked about uninformed voters. That's part of the problem. They don't, they just look at it and just vote, and they don't look deeper into these people. I've had friends that they're very liberal in their thinking. I'll put it that way. And I mentioned some of the things about what he's planning on doing. They said, I didn't know that. It depends what channel you're watching. Also, you know, where they're not informed. They don't know this. They don't know these things that's deep behind the scenes.
No, but they do now, because once he announced his policies, there was such an uproar. The victims came out. Law enforcement's come out, especially next to kin of murdered people are coming
right.
out. Look, I want justice for my murdered husband. I want justice for my child. I want justice for this a member of our family who is going to be going to MIT. It's just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I want the law to be enforced. I want the enhancements to be included. So the right result is it comes about. And he's saying no, and they're fighting him. And you watch, he's had, there's been so much on television, especially with the victims. On December 31st, New Year's Eve, there was a victim rights vigil. I think people are going to go, you know what, now I really know what this guy's all about. And you're going to see a reaction to him that should have occurred before he got elected.
Right, right. And unfortunately now, well, we'll just wait and see about the recall. Hey, Steve, we're really out of time, but at one more time, let people know where they can find your book again, because I think that's a very important. A lot of my listeners, they want to know about your book. So one more time before we cut off.
Well, here's the book, Blue Lives in Jeopardy, When the Badge Becomes the Target, nonfiction. You get it in all the usual places. Amazon is where most people go nowadays, but Barnes & Noble. And you can find out more about it through the website, BlueLivesInJeopardyBook.com. And that'll tell you a little bit about the history, who's endorsing it, who says nice things about it. And we got some great endorsers. We got Michael Connelly, some district attorneys, and some law enforcement officials who say it's a pretty good book and an important book. And I think it is.
I'll wait for my autographed copy.
Well, you'll get one. I just mailed it.
Oh, that's right. We do have it. That's right.
Yeah, you got both of them.
That's right. And the first one was Blue Lives Matter, correct?
Right. You got,
that's right.
This one through the mail last week. Maybe that's right.
Okay, sounds good. Well, we appreciate it. Jamal, any closing thoughts?
Hey, everybody, continue to be safe out there.
That's all we can do, right? All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. We're getting ready to sign off, and sorry about those technical difficulties in the beginning, but it looks like we're off and running for the new year. Take care, everybody, and be safe.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.